Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, Dad, describe my outfit.
What is it?
Describe it for the listeners, because this isn't a video. What does my outfit look like?
Well, it looks like a sort of knitted onesie that for an overgrown baby or something. It's just weird.
I think it looks like a carpet. You know, like the type of carpet you get which really itches your feet?
I hope you didn't pay for it.
No, I didn't. I got it for free.
Who from?
No, I'm joking, Dad. We can't say it's so bad. I'm joking. I'm an influencer. Can't say from who. Just a secret admirer. It was a late Valentine's gift.
Okay, Grace, describe my outfit.
Okay, so you are wearing boxer shorts. Boxer shorts?
No, it's swimming trunks.
Oh, they're swimming trunks. So it's February the 24th in London. The weather is probably 12 degrees.
And the pools are shut.
And the pools are shut. And he's wearing swimming trunks, Asics trainers, yeah, which are all right. A nice jumper, actually, if it was worn better. And then a T-shirt, which I have many a time seen you throw snot onto.
No, it's because I'm going to train in this after we've done this.
Oh, he's training. Yeah. Training. Yeah. You're wearing a very classic
AC look.
AC at home. Mm. Not even AC at home, because if you were going into town today for an outside meeting in the summer, you'd wear this.
No, I wouldn't. In fact, I went out of town yesterday.
Where did you go? I checked your location.
I went to Hampshire for a TV thing.
God, you're really going around, aren't you?
Not really. And it was for Alan Titchmarsh's weekend programme. Which is all about the countryside. So I talked about my tree obsession. Took my bagpipes. Oh, and the Charles... Did you see the Charles Kennedy documentary?
No.
Really good.
Oh,
really
I loved him.
I know you did. I've written a very good long blog about him.
Everybody, if you don't know, Alistair Campbell has a blog. It's alistaircampbell.org.
Correct.
Yeah, thank you very much. So this week we have a guest on the podcast, as ever, and he is connected to me via my best friend, Tara. He lives near Tara, and this is...
Are they neighbours?
They're neighbours, and she grew up on the same road as him.
And she babysits
for him.
Right.
We always babysat for him and his kids.
So we're basically now just scrabbling around finding your babysitter.
Yes, exactly. I literally just said in the WhatsApp group, guys, I need to get someone on my podcast. Has anyone got any middle-aged men living near them that they could send me the email address of? So that's how we got... No, I'm joking. That's not how we got him on. But that was very exciting for me, as I'm very fond of Tara, and Tara is a secondary school teacher doing God's work, not getting vaccinated.
And also in this... series so far, we haven't yet had a politician, have we?
We haven't had a politician.
And this guy's a politician.
He's a politician, but more importantly, he's Tara's neighbour.
He's Tara's neighbour. We talked about more than Tara.
No, I'm joking. I'm just a joke. But he is he's obviously a politician. He's very well known and he's very outspoken on many things.
Well, let's go through and let's give people a few clues, shall we?
Okay, well, they will see in the title of the podcast who it is.
Okay.
But
well, should we just say
who
it is?
We can still do that.
Okay, right. So he's Labour.
Labour. He is
front
Tottenham.
Bench.
Tottenham.
He's a black boy from Tottenham.
Black male. I'd say he's older than a boy now.
I've heard him call himself a black boy quite a lot. Big Spurs fan.
Spurs fan.
Very strong views on Jose Mourinho. We get into that, don't we?
Uh-huh. He...
Actually, that's not good, is it? Because that's talking after the event.
That's fine, I can cut that.
Okay.
Don't worry. He has children.
He does have children.
He talks very, very... he's a very campaigning politician, I would say, especially on issues of race. Which is very much needed.
And equality and access to education and all that sort of stuff. He's a good bloke. I've known David. I've said he is. No, I've known him for a long, long time. And he's a good bloke. Really like him.
And he also, as we will get into in the podcast, got into politics when he was basically the same age as me, which is frightening.
He became an MP 20...
I could be a politician right now. Can you imagine?
Well, I mean, Grace, to some extent you are. I mean, I know, you're an influencer.
I'm
you get
wearing a shaggy-looking tracksuit that looks like scrambled eggs.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guest on this week is...
David Lammy.
Well, thank you for doing this, David. I wanted to start because obviously we found out we were doing this so last minute, but I was thinking about like what I wanted to ask you about. One of the things I found fascinating is that you became an MP when you were so young, first of all. And yes. At that time, my dad was in government. What yes. was it like being, you were 28, right?
Or 27, actually.
Jesus, that's only a year older than me.
Yeah, I was young.
But what so I was, young.
The thing is, there are two worlds, okay? I mean, I'm now much older, so I could... But in Tottenham terms, in terms of being a young black man in Britain, I was not young. You know, my dad left when I was 12. I had friends in prison. I had, you know, mental health. My dad had problems with alcohol. I had lived in the States. So in some senses, I wasn't young at all. But in another sense, I was very young because I was young to politics, definitely. Because as you know, in both political parties, there are folk that have kind of been dropping leaflets since they were sort of five. And their parents are MPs or trade union leaders or whatever the tribal world they're in. And they're sort of completely steeped. And I was not that. And I was definitely green to Westminster because Westminster's a viper's nest.
It is.
You know, and actually, but strangely, I was sort of thinking about this in terms of politics. You know, you can have... Politics quite likes leaders that come from nowhere, are very inexperienced, but are somehow pure. I'm thinking of people like Barack Obama. I'm thinking a bit of Tony Blair, actually. But he had been around, but do you know what I mean? It likes that. But it's a bit mythical. It's not really like that. Politics is better when you're experienced, actually. So, yeah, I was green on one level, but I wasn't in another level.
But there were so few black people in Westminster. Was that not just really weird?
Well, it's really weird when you think that we live in London.
Yeah.
But the other thing about Westminster, I'd never been to Westminster when I got there. I'd never been. I'd never got out at Westminster Tube Station. There was no reason. You know, when I went into town, it was sort of Oxford Street or somewhere or Covent Garden. And I certainly had never been to the Commons. You get some MPs joke about sort of getting on the circle and district line and not knowing where to get off and just go around in circles. You know, these are sort of northern MPs that never been on the tube. I wasn't quite that bad, but you probably know the way in which people think, oh, you're in this big city, London's this big place, but actually it can be an incredibly parochial place. We're North Londoners. You know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, it's so different.
You know your postcode. You don't... When I'm in West London, I'm always like, wow, I've never been here before. There are still tube stations I come out of. I've never, ever stepped out of that tube station. So...
I get homesick when I'm in West London.
Miles away from North London, from where I'm from.
So you're from Tottenham?
I'm born and raised from Tottenham, yeah. Born and raised N17. In that sense, I think that Tottenham's a very big area. You know, it's a big old place, and Haringey's a kind of slightly strange borough because it's sort of Muswell Hill, Crouch End, and Highgate on one side, and Tottenham Wood Green on the other, basically. Which most London boroughs aren't like that. They're sort of more, you know. You can have a big, wealthy set of houses next to a housing estate. You know, they're a bit
more... Yeah, that's what Camden's quite like.
Camden's like that, definitely. Tower Hamlets is a bit like that.
And did you feel you had to support Tottenham Hotspur?
Everyone always says that. And I always think that's so rude. Did I have to support Tottenham fucking Hotspur? Oh, I swore, sorry. No, I did.
Why is that even a question, Dad, if you're from Tottenham? Just because you made your kids who are from North London support fucking teams like Burnley and Manchester United. We should have all supported Arsenal.
Just because David swore, you don't need to swear. It was actually in both cases. No, I just think, you know, but you because you do support Tottenham, but you're going through a bit of a hard time in your love affair with them at the moment, I'd say.
I haven't so often. I like tweeting about Tottenham. I like giving my opinions about Tottenham, and I definitely like banter with gooners and taking the, you know, having a go. But we're playing really badly, and this was our season. All, you know, Bale was back, Kane was on form, Son's fantastic, Lamela finally, Dele Alli, Mourinho, we're going to do it. And yet again, which is the whole story. And I've got to say, my love affair with Spurs is a bit like the Labour Party. You're good, you don't quite make it. And it's just like, it's like snakes and ladders. But I did think, I thought Mourinho's ego is too big. He's past it and it's all coming true. And he's got this way that I think then undermines the players. Don't feel confident. They don't feel lifted up. And you can tell that the dressing room's gone. And that's sadly where I think we've ended up. So yet again, a season that should be ours isn't going to be.
But when you have those moments, right, when you fall out of love with the team you support, do you, like, want to just stop engaging? Because that's how I feel about the Labour Party. when I fell out, I just stop engaging, stop taking part, stop having conversations about it because it pisses me off too much. Is that what you do with Tottenham?
I haven't done that yet with the Labour Party.
I hope so. You're still in it.
I haven't done that with Tottenham, no. But I'm not as engaged this year as I would be. But I think that's because as tough as this season's turning out, I would be going to White Hart Lane. I'd be taking the kids. I love going with my boys and screaming and shouting. We get to about 7 or 8 games a season and we can't go. So
you're a majorly part-time supporter then, yeah?
Are you going? Are you getting to the games?
I have my ways.
Oh, you're lagging tickets.
No. I can get into the club commentary. If I'm going to the Tottenham Burnley game, and it's actually, I'm not enjoying it because you do the commentary and it gets you in to watch the game live, but I mean, I'm actually been thinking a lot because the new Tottenham Stadium.
Can we do it together?
Oh, you should do that, Dad.
I can see if they can squeeze you. I'm sure they squeeze you in. But the thing is that without the crowd, football is not football. It's just not enjoyable.
So
even the game, we played Palace on Saturday. We were absolutely brilliant. We won 3-0. It was fantastic. Goal of the season, Matt Loughton. I love him. I want to have his babies. I've fallen. Even Ashley Barnes. I could live without Ashley Barnes. Matt Loughton's the man. But it's just not the same.
No.
I'm interested, by the way. I sort of noticed, David, you did say, I don't have that relationship yet with the Labour Party, you said. Now, yet. If I can analyse.
Only time will prevail.
So you said, Grace, I want to go back because you said what was it like? And part of what, when you said at the beginning of this, what was it like going to Westminster? You were so young and my dad was there.
Yeah, so this is what I wanted to ask.
That little moment was what was it like? Because it's that horrible feeling. You know, he noticed something I'd said and it was a little aside and he just quoted it back at me and I hadn't even realised I'd said it.
But when you started,
you're in front of the headmaster and you're screwed. It was that feeling. 27.
Can you imagine what my life's been like, David? My entire life. 26 years.
Tough.
But was it when you started in Westminster, was it like he was somebody that people sort of didn't really want to hang around with or piss off, or was it a bit of a joke?
I think that so look, one of the things about the Labour Party that we've learnt is it can be one of the most indisciplined major political forces in the Western world. When it's going badly, it's going badly. And, you know, our political parties are big tent coalitions. The Labour Party is a big, you know, if we had a PR, you know, we'd have lots of smaller parties, but we've got one big party and it has to be disciplined. And obviously, when I arrived on the scene, and it was a by-election, Bernie Grant's by-election, the Labour Party was at, you know, it was in a phenomenally disciplined place after 18 years in opposition. And a hell of a lot of work had gone in to put it in that place. It felt like a machine that was finely tuned, that was going well. We were pulling in the right direction. And you know what? The scale of the challenge was understood. What we were up against, you know, in terms of the establishment, the media, the way in which the standard for us is so much higher than it is for the Tories. Look what they're getting away with. Right. Mm. And so there was, and your dad was at the apex of that group of people that had done a lot of heavy lifting. And I certainly wasn't. I was on the receiving end of that. I was a black kid growing up in Tottenham I knew what the front line looked like. But I hadn't done the heavy lifting at that stage within the party. I'm probably now in a position where we're doing a lot of heavy lifting. So once again,
did you feel like passionate about New Labour at that point? Did you feel like you were a New Labour baby?
I had lived through the the demonising, the ridiculing of the loony left, because I grew up in Haringey. And if you grew up in Haringey, Hackney or Islington or Lambeth, you knew something about that. And you knew that that was never, we had to get past that. And definitely 1994 was a sense in which we'd got past that. I'd also say, let me say this really, really bluntly. I thought Michael Foot was great. I loved Neil Kinnock. And I remember 1983, teachers of mine, socialist teachers saying, Labour's going to win. And we didn't. And then 87, we're going to win. And we didn't. 92, first time I'd voted, we're going to win. And we didn't. And what I worked out is, as much as I love these wonderful socialist teachers, they weren't really on the receiving end when we lost. They went back to comfortable podium homes, nice red glasses of wine. Me and my mates, we were back in Tottenham. We were on the receiving end. So in that sense, I definitely realised that, you know, we had to be singing a different tune. And because I, you know, Tottenham is everything to me, but I also have this relationship with Peterborough, you know, I've always understood, you know, if Labour's not winning in Peterborough, it's not winning. It's as simple as that. And at the moment, Labour isn't winning in Peterborough. Mm.
What is that a thing? Peterborough
was one of those bellwether seats. You know this, Alistair, you know, it goes right with the yeah, grain absolutely of the country. Yeah. Yeah. Newtown.
Keighley's and all of them.
Sorry?
But David, you talk about the elections that you remember with Neil Kinnock and Michael Foot, etc. If you go back over the last 11 general elections, from a Labour perspective, the results are as follows. Lost, 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 lost. Blair, Blair, Blair. Lost, 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 lost. Now, that is terrifying. And it means...
But what are you saying there?
Well, I'm sort of saying that, you know, we won three elections, and yet, you know, it seems to me that a lot of the, particularly when Jeremy was in charge, your next door neighbour,
Tara's his next door neighbour.
No, he's his constituency next door neighbour. But the you know, we talk a lot about learning lessons, but we don't seem to me to want to learn that many lessons about how we won. It's all a bit weird. Do you think that's changing with Keir?
Yes. Yes. But we've got a hell of a lot of heavy lifting still to do. There's a long, 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 long way. And
why is that? Terrible. Given that this government is so bad. This government's terrible.
I know, Alistair, I know. It's shocking. I know. But the truth is we were beaten into a pulp at the last general election. There are only 200 of us or so now in the Parliamentary Labour Party. The world has changed a bit, you know, the sort of social media stuff and all that slightly changed the world a bit. And New Labour had, 10 consecutive quarters of growth. And what we've had is austerity and now deep recession. And unfortunately, against that backdrop, it also lends itself to the populace, the shysters, the Boris Johnsons. So we're up against it. And so we've got a lot of heavy lifting to do. And if you're saying, do we have to learn from that period? Then my view is definitely. And you have to hang together as a unit. And it's my hope and pray that it's not another defeat that gets us to that point. But, you know, we've got to win 124 seats to have a majority of one. It's massive. I mean, that is a bigger swing than 97. We got a hell of a lot to do. But maybe not as much as top.
It's weird. But what does it feel like? It's weird because of COVID. You can't really pack the place out. You've got a prime minister who, I think, uniquely, genuinely doesn't care about whether he tells the truth or not, genuinely doesn't care whether he's on top of the detail. I mean, the rules are being changed. And, you see them packing all the public bodies with their cronies and shipping the money where they want to ship it. And I mean, you should be battering this lot.
Well, come on. I mean, I think that actually we have sort of rediscovered our mojo with Keir. I do think that's happened. He's not obviously been in post yet a year. So when I say we've got a lot to do, I mean, he's still got and we've all got alongside him a lot to do. But actually, relative to where we were last Christmas when we lost, I didn't think we'd be in this position. We're in a better position than I thought we'd be. It's been a most extraordinary parallel universe, weird year because of COVID and pandemic. And now, you know, all these people have died and the economy's crashing. Yes, they're getting the vaccine out, but our job is in part to help the British people understand all of this in context. We haven't really got to vision stuff because it's hard to get to vision stuff when, you know, there's just one mono theme. I mean, the only other theme that cut through last year was Black Lives Matter, really. Mm. So that's odd. And then actually before Black Lives Matter, the only other main theme was Brexit. So that's the other thing that's happened. I'm not an expert on this, but we've been really mono theme for years. Mm. You know, Brexit, pandemic, Black Lives Matter. And it's like there's a hell of a lot more going on than that. As much as I care about all of those, there's a lot more going on. So it is a bit peculiar. It looks like we're about to come out of that. And the big question is, because we're in a recession, does politics get back to a degree of it's all about the economy, stupid, which was the general, definitely that was the general assumption, under Tony Blair, Bill Clinton, those sorts of leaders.
Did you? Sorry, Grace.
Let Grace get a word in edgeways.
I was just going to say, and I know you can't really say anything about this because you're an MP and he's the leader of the Labour Party, but of all those big issues, you know, COVID, Black Lives Matter, Brexit, and then what was the other thing that you just said? Maybe it was just them.
Black Lives Matter.
Oh, and Trump. Dad said Trump. Yeah. Dad said Trump. I don't think Keir, I think he's been neither here nor there on pretty much all of those issues. I think one of the things that's coming through to like me and my friends is that he clearly doesn't really have very strong opinions about much, or he's trying to please everyone. And that's what I worry about going wrong when you talk about how much of a challenge this is going to be for Keir in the next general election. That's all I wanted to say. I'm just a little girl with very stupid little opinions, but...
Yeah, sure.
No, my dad's just thinking, Grace, shut up. Just leave me to do the politics.
No. Very interesting perspective, Grace. And I'd be interested in David's answer.
So, Grace, I think that... I genuinely think that Keir's instinct that the pandemic requires us to pull in the same direction is true. I think every single prime minister's is a lot of scrutiny of what Boris is up to, but there isn't a sense in which we're undermining the national effort. And I think that that is definitely the case. And I think his judgment there is right. I think that actually Black Lives Matter, Keir took the knee. Keir takes a view about the murder of George Floyd and all the things that flow from it. Boris takes a different view.
David, the last time we spoke, I told you never call him Boris. You're not listening.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You're repeating the same mistakes.
I know. I know. I called him Mr. Johnston on Twitter the other day. It went down well. I'd actually been speaking to you and then my aunt talked about the fact that he had bloody combed his hair. And I called him Mr. Johnston in that tweet. But you're right. I should stop calling him Boris. I think it's got something to do with being a Londoner. And of course, he was Boris when he was running London.
How did you feel when Priti Patel said the other day that she was appalled and disgusted by some of the Black Lives Matter protests?
I hate it because I know we know what she's doing. She's playing to her base. She's looking down the road to when Boris is no longer the leader. And I just hate an issue like that being used as a political football. I hate it. It's so ugly and unattractive.
Yeah, it's vile.
And unnecessary. I also wonder, because my real sense is that the millennials and Generation Y can't stand that stuff. They can see through that stuff wherever they are in the country. So But they keep stoking these ridiculous culture wars, rows about whether we should have a Churchill statue, about what we're playing at the proms, and all sorts of stuff that comes out of nowhere. It's all distraction. It's not the stuff of, the real stuff. Can you get your cancer treatment? Can your kids get an education? Can you actually have a job at the end of this thing? The real stuff that matters. The stuff, by the way, that Rishi Sunak, a lot of it, what's he saying? He's disappeared since he rolled his shirts up and was serving food in that fancy restaurant with his go out and spread COVID scheme. He's disappeared. How's he got,
Do you wish that you could be seeing a lot more of these politicians in the flesh right now? Because then you could actually say some of these, do you see each other at all at the moment?
We do a bit, yeah, we do a bit. Not as much. The business of being able to properly lobby. Whenever I'm in Parliament, I tend to go in on a Tuesday. It's about, 30 or 40 colleagues in at the same time. So you're not in the same way, no. It's not a good way to do politics. A lot of politics is done in the margins. A lot of politics is about, and actually that's another thing with the Labour Party. Keir can't even, he wants to be able to do a speech. He wants to be able to, have a cup of tea, a coffee, have a couple of beers with a few colleagues, get a sense of what's happening. Not just him, his staff want to be able to do that. There was a lot of that going on. We haven't been able to do any of that for a year. This is not how politics is actually properly done.
No, I was going to say, is the reason though that they get sort of traction for all this stuff about no platforming in universities and the flag and all this sort of stuff? Is that because is there not a risk that that's because Labour has not got an agenda that does speak to what people really, really care about? And do you, you know, do you feel that that's just been drowned out by, because just the sheer power of the COVID story, the drama of it, of it all, and the danger of it all?
I don't think it's just that. I don't think it's just that. I think that the bottom line is, you know this, Alistair, you're asking questions, you know. When you get hammered at the election like we did at Christmas 2019, beaten back to the worst we've been since 1935, when you go to the electorate with a manifesto that's roundly rejected, when you pile on votes in seats like mine, but, you know, I mean, look at the map, look at the electoral map, swathes of blue all over the place, except a bit in London, a bit in the cities. Mm. When that happens, the electorate stop talking to you. You know, sometimes you can't, you know, you put a press release out, it doesn't get picked up. No, you know, people forget the Labour Party even exists. They want your opinion. You know, you become irrelevant, and you have to fight your way back to being relevant once more. Mm. You have to earn even the right to be heard, never mind the right for people to decide whether what you're saying they're up for. And very, very sadly, and you know, we forget this quickly, where Labour found itself in Christmas 2019. Some might say is even worse than where we were in, let's say, 1979 or 1983. So that's why I say it is a long haul. Do you disagree?
Okay.
You do disagree? You disagree. So.
No, it's not I disagree. It's
definitely
no, it's just that I think that, you know, Jeremy Corbyn's leadership was always going to lead that way, I'm afraid. And I think the fact of him no longer being the leader means that actually the fight back ought to be able to defy a few political rules of gravity, I think.
Well, let's see where we are when we get back to a degree of normality towards the end of this year.
Okay.
We'll have another chat.
All right.
Part two. Oh, well, I was just going to first ask you, as someone who grew up with a father who's heavily involved in politics, how do your kids find it?
Well, that's a really good question. well, my eldest's birthday is today, and he's 15. And I, you know, I'm not sure he's that keen on politics. And I'm not sure he's that keen on having to think a little bit about what he does, you know, when he's with his mates, because his dad's in the public eye. And I suspect you know a lot about how that feels.
I feel for him.
So when you said, what did you want for your birthday? He said, I want you to do Alistair and Grace Campbell's podcast, Dad. That's what I want you to do on my birthday. Best present ever.
Well, I mean, what he wanted was us to leave the house, was me and his mum to leave our house and to sort of hand it over to him and his mates, notwithstanding the fact that we're in lockdown. And I'm like, but one, we can't because of the rules. And two, even if the rules weren't there, thank God they are, why would I hand you over the key to my house with your mates? You know, why would I do that? So instead, he's getting a really fancy bike.
It's not, you know, that people have it much in much worse situations, but it is something people don't talk about, especially that age when you're a teenager and everything's for the first time and you're sort of just trying to live your life. And I had to really be super careful with what I was doing. I mean, I wasn't actually, I was pretty reckless, come to think of it. It's not the most pleasant way to go through your teenage years, basically, is what I will say.
No, it's not. And you know, and there's also the thing which you probably are aware of having to be a bit suspicious sometimes of, you know, new friends and who's befriending you, and are they befriending you for you, or are they befriending you because of who they might think you are, and some of that sort of nervousness as well. But broadly, well,
basically, they just shouldn't be friends with people from private schools. That was the rule. Because it will always be private school kids that have bad intentions, let's be honest.
Oh, I'll tell him that. I haven't told him that. We've got friends at private school, so I'll feed that one back. I'll feed that one back, state school boy that he is.
Yeah, because they've got friends whose mums and dads work at the Daily Telegraph and the Daily Mail, and they feed in all the shit.
Exactly.
Oh right, I hadn't worked that one through. I mean, he's quite a good lad.
So. No, I'm sure he is. It's just like, it's so, I was once at a house party. It was at Highgate, the private school. It was like one of those kids' house parties. And somebody took a picture of me smoking a spliff. It wasn't actually a spliff, but I'm sure it was one of these little private school kids, and their parents had said, look, you've been hanging around near Alistair Campbell's daughter.
Yeah,
here's your little iPhone. Go on, get me some materials.
And they gave it to the son.
Yeah. They gave it to the son.
Okay, Grace. I'm going to put him in touch. It's as simple as that.
David, are they? Do you feel that they're political? Have they got strong political instincts and views?
Yeah, because they're growing up in a political house.
And
my wife's, pretty bloody, like Fiona, has got views. So they're hearing lots of points. They don't, I'm not finding that with us particularly they're political, but we do hear, when we go to parents' evenings and stuff, we hear from clearly that, the conversation.
Well, you know what it is? It's like another, because it's all you talk about, or a lot of what you talk about, it would just be like a second language. Like when I got to secondary school, it was like I didn't need to learn about it. I just knew it because I'd be like, oh, yeah, my dad says he's a twat. Or like I've overheard my parents bitching about that woman. Like
There's a literacy around all this stuff. My youngest is only, obviously, she's only seven, so she's certainly not. She's just working out. She's at that stage where I'm on the street and someone says, oh, hello, David. Oh, hello, Mr. Lammy. And she's just working out. Is that your friend? it's just about to, oh, dad does this job. So that's just happening. But the other two certainly know that.
The last time we spoke, David, was we talked about mental health and did a thing on life in lockdown. And you said you've been finding it a bit of a struggle, as have I. So have you been since then?
Up and down.
Mm.
The family and I were away for Christmas. I'm not going to say where they were, but we were going away for Christmas, sadly they left on Thursday, and good old me was we could work and I'll leave on the Sunday, and of course tier four came down, and so I spent Christmas with me and the dog.
Oh no!
so that wasn't a great start or a great end to the year.
Oh, and my actually, God, that's tragic.
I'm actually quite good with my own company, and I hadn't had that sort of time on my own for decades. So there was an element of it that was actually, wow, what am I going to do now? I've got it. But I have to say, I listened to a lot of music, which was great, but my little girl, she's six, and I did think, she's not going to be six again. Christmas is such a lovely time with a six-year-old. She still believes in Father Christmas, and I missed it all. Mm. I wasn't there. So that got me down. Now we're not quite on the same, they've had a break and I haven't. I'm really bored of... not bored, just fed up of looking at my face all day on a screen. I love London, but I actually love the English countryside. If someone could give me the holiday of a lifetime next week, it would be, you know, it would be walking in the Yorkshire Moor, the Dales, the South Downs.
I was doing that 2 weeks ago.
How did you get me? You should have said that. You could have cut it out.
I didn't know to have you because they were asking me. I did the BBC Winter Walks programme.
Oh,
I
work.
Honestly okay. thought
essential work.
I honestly thought that this is not going to be deemed to be essential. They'll have to scrap it, and they didn't. We did it, and honestly, I had such a good, nice time. But they said to me, "If you think of anybody you think would be interesting to do this, would really like to do it, let me know." So I'll tell them.
What's the show? I don't know the show. I don't know the show. Alistair, what do you do? You go for a long walk.
Oh, it's amazing. It's called Winter Walks. You have a selfie stick with a camera on the end, which films you talking to yourself, and it films the countryside in 360 degrees. You bump into people, and you just talk to yourself all day. You've got a film crew behind you and a film crew ahead, and you've got a drone. But you're on your own, just walking.
And it ends up at, what, an hour of TV?
I think it's about an hour, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I'd love that. That sounds
and
great.
It's essential, apparently.
Absolutely essential. And I started at the waterfall where Elgar used to go when he couldn't get the inspiration going. It was just fantastic. Honestly, it was 3 weeks ago tomorrow, and I'm still kind of living off it in terms of
breathing. Yeah. Well, that's exactly what that would be my idea of, I just want to walk. Because the other thing is I know you run and stuff, but I'm not feeling particularly fit. You know, it's stuck at a desk all day. It's sort of I'm feeling now the toxins are sort of...
Yeah, no fresh air. The cobwebs
out my brain. You know, you want a week of just feeling the wind, just whistling through, you know, just that feeling. There's a certain feeling. I can't really put your finger on it. I'm pining for it.
I'll tell them. I'm sure they'd like you.
Essential work. There it is. I'm out. I'm gone. Bye, Keir.
and how's Nicola and the kids then been in with the whole kind
they're
of
all right. You know, they're all right. You know, Nicola's life's probably changed the least. You know, her studio's really close to home. You know, the nature of her work, the balance of family and stuff. So her life's probably changed the least. So she's doing really well. And the other thing is, she's an artist, and a lot of people have been at home during the lockdown. They're at home. They're watching their bare walls. They're actually having time to look at her website or think about whether they want to buy a piece of work. So she's actually quite busy. It's me that's working in a weird environment because politics does not work like this. And then the kids, in different ways, different stages, who obviously the school learning, the home learning, all that stuff is a bit of a nightmare for them. And particularly, I think, for the eldest, the teenagers, the whole point of being a teenager is socialization. I mean, that's the whole point.
Completely. I cannot imagine being 15 and being told I can't see my friends.
I'm quite sorry for this, for the university students as well. I mean, it's just a real nightmare. So they're fine. It's miserable old me.
You.
So you asked about my mental health. It's okay, but I need a walking holiday. That's what I need. Strange. Okay. For me, it's usually I want the Caribbean, but actually it's not actually for me lying horizontally on a beach next to the water. I need the cobwebs blown out. You know, I need cow dust on my shoes.
Have you noticed an uptick in mental health problems being reported from constituents?
Yeah, definitely.
Of all age range?
Well, yeah, because it's well, no, there's also, look, it's gone in cycles. At the moment, there's a sort of vanishing thing going on. So I think that there are kids now who are just dropped out of school. They're just vanished. Well, they're sort of roaming, and I'm really worried about them. I've got my show on LBC on a Saturday afternoon, and earlier in the year, you know, anything on COVID, you get a hell of a lot of business owners ringing in. You know, I run a wedding company, I run a laundrette, I run this. I'm going to go bust. The government's got to do this. People have stopped ringing in. Why have businesses stopped ringing really? In? Is it because they've gone bust? They're just not, you know, they're not ringing in the same volumes, right? And I worry about those guys. You know, what's happened? Mm. They've gone to the wall, or they're just written it off. You know, they're so. I think there's now, we're now in this place of, yeah, of course we're gonna, the vaccine means people come out, but the repercussions of where we've been, the reality of where we've been. Tottenham's got the highest unemployment in the country, if you count the furloughs scheme as well, coming to an end. So, ooh. And I think, the other thing I think, sorry to be depressing, but you know, this is one of the things I've noticed. We're really good at depressing each other. We're really, really good. If you want a new show, anyone, to Grumpy Old Men, commission us. Who the hell's going to listen? I have no idea. But we're really good. But what I was about to say is this recession's even worse than the 80s, because there's a hell of a lot of middle class people who have been screwed and who are going to get screwed. And I don't think that was quite the same in the 1980s. And that's why, coming back to your point, we need a Labour Party that's really, you know, on its mojo, because this is serious.
Do you think once COVID is over and people, we can have that sort of social interaction again in the same way, that we'll start to see that the past year has made some progress? I mean, do you know what I mean? In that this huge sort of shift has happened, but we can only see that from online. And what do you think will start to happen when we go back into sort of normal world, normal life?
Well, I think the world is going to change a bit. Now, in positive ways and less positive ways. So when my son is getting really grumpy and down and, oh, I hate my friend, I fucking hate you, Dad, I hate you. When he's getting like that, I always say to him, when this is over,
you hate me even more.
It's going to be a hell of a party. It's going to make the 60s look tame. It's going to be a great time to be young. And I'm not as young anymore. So I really, it's going to be a great time. So on one level, because my wife's an artist as well, you also get a lot of avant-garde, you get a lot of energy, you get a lot of the artists, you know, the creatives get really motivated, you know. So on one level, let's not give the impression it's all going to be, you know, there's always stuff going on. But on another level, I think that, you know, a lot of the stuff we're doing virtually is going to stay. You know, if you're running a business, why would you have sort of four floors of an office suite when you could have, you know, half of one and the rest of you on Zoom? So, you know, that's all going to change. And I think that a bit like, you know, when I was younger, we had the YTS scheme under Margaret Thatcher. It wasn't brilliant, but it was there for young people. Gordon Brown came up with a Future Jobs Fund and stuff. There's going to be a lot of stuff around youth unemployment that's going to need to happen. I don't know whether I'm not sure it's going to happen under this government, to be honest. We'll have these ridiculous culture wars, just like Trump. And there's a lot of serious stuff going on in between. There'll be a lot of blaming, scapegoating. You know what I mean? You know, you pick on the immigrant, you pick on this person, it's that fault, and you know, Skivers and all the rest of it. And then I think internationally, the world's quite a dangerous place. Thank God Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have just won. Thank you. That was a silver lining. These are big, big political times, big political currents. The social media stuff hasn't been sorted out, the regulation of all that. The inequality, the billionaires, and the you know, there's a lot slushing around, isn't there? And there's going to be, and the millennials, Grace, you, because I'm a Gen Xer, I'm a mini baby boomer.
I think I'm Gen Z technically.
Well, yeah, Gen Z, Gen Y, millennials, all of you, are basically the children of boomers. So you're a massive generation. My little generation's a little mini generation in the middle. Yeah. We're Thatcher's kids. And Thatcher was so rough, people didn't have many children. So we're a small little generation. But you guys are a big generation with big ideas and a big vision. You haven't yet got your hands on the levers of power. You know, you're not running a FTSE 100. You're not editors of newspapers. You're not, but you're going to be.
No, and I love over this period,
and that's
that.
Going to be pretty exciting.
I agree, as long as, we just don't have a repeat of what's happening now, which is still in most of the most powerful positions in the country, it's old Etonians. I mean, if you look at the BBC and, you know, the establishments like that are just going backwards. So that's one of the things I find comfort in, for sure, is thinking when, you know, all of the Gen Z kids of today are running things, it will be better. But equally, I mean, we've got to change institutions from within first, I think.
But David, don't you think that I sort of feel that the country, and in particular, in a way, young people, because young people are usually the ones that are out sort of first to protest and first to argue and agitate, there's so little of that going on. Now, is that just because of COVID? I mean, I get the feeling we're all a bit becalmed. I mean, I wake up every day thinking this is the worst government of our lifetime. They are sub-hungry in terms of their sort of attempt to subvert basic rights the whole time. And it's like people just, it is what it is. Get on with it. Need a bit more anger in the place.
Well, I worry a bit. I worry a bit that we've, you know, Alice, you know that there was a sort of decision that was made by Thatcher where we sort of departed the European model and we went halfway towards the American model. And the really, really depressing side of Brexit is now we're going to go full throttle towards the American model because it's the only way that economically it works. And we get all those downsides. And I worry that some of that kind of, you know, there's a horrible thing about you can be in parts of Middle America and people are sort of fat on consumerism, crap TV, Fox News, all this fluff that isn't the real stuff. I do worry a bit about that. I
worry a lot about it.
This noise that's just totally irrelevant crap. It's not really the real. So I get that point, but I still see on climate, things like Black Lives Matter, and actually on inequality, a politics that's quite present across a younger generation, which I hope lands somewhere. Now, the flip side of that is obviously during the whole Brexit debate, there were occasions on which you and I would be on a march for a second referendum. And there was a bit of me feeling, God, this feels a bit Waitrose.
Completely. Oh, God. Very prep.
It just felt so safe and so polite and so sort of, you know, in my head I was like, I don't know. That's the paradox of our age. I don't know, you know, I haven't got all the answers.
But I think I always thought going on those protests, it was just hilarious. Like the demographic of them was just, it used to crack me up. It was just loads of old white people who would come outside of London from wherever they live in the suburbs with their ham and cheese baguettes, singing along to the chants. I did think that, but also you did a good job, both of you guys, and you never stopped fighting. So I'm not doing any disservice. I think the main thing for me is like how disconcerting young people find it when they see no change happen. And that's what I worry about. You know, I do worry that it will then put people off of carrying on with the fight that you have when you're young. It's like, you don't give a shit. You're going to put everything you have into it. And then slowly that does get killed by, you know, that feeling of rejection and that you're never going to be able to make anything happen. And I don't think that will happen, but that's just the reality of like the way that the world is. So we just got to
keep reading. David, what's been your best telly programme you've watched in lockdown?
Well, my wife and I have binged on a kind of mid. It's about 5 years old. It's a show called Parenthood, a drama, an American drama called Parenthood.
Oh, wow.
It's a bit like Brothers and Sisters or...
have you heard of it, Grace?
No. This Is Us. Anyway, if you're a parent, it's sort of wonderful. And it's sort of six seasons. And we've just literally, tonight, we come to the end of our binge on that. And we will turn to Channel 4's It's a Sin.
Oh, that was amazing.
To catch up on what all our friends are talking about. So we've really, really enjoyed that. We love a good, we love Bridgerton, actually. We sort of flip around, but we, on the whole, we love stuff that's deep, that has a kind of moral heart, that makes us think, that reflects back aspects of our own lives. This parenthood has got adoption in it. We've got an adopted, my daughter's adopted. It's got, the business of teenagers and kids and parents that are, not so well, and siblings that, all that stuff. And we love, if we go to the theatre, that's the sort of stuff we're trying to look for and go and see. That's what we get off on.
Dad, sounds like you're like that.
Yeah.
What do you watch? I'm always up for good. What have you watched?
I've been doing this German course, so I've been...
Don't take his recommendations.
No, honestly, Grace, even Mum, even though it's in German, she loves Charité.
David, my dad is obsessive and he's been learning German and he makes my mum watch all the things they can watch have to be in German now.
Oh dear!
Yeah,
that's not my cup of tea. Oh dear!
Oh well, it's a bit of French then. Call my agent.
Call my agent is brilliant.
Call my agent.
Oh, yeah. That is amazing! What's it on? Netflix.
And Lupin.
Well, Lupin. My son's watching that. He's watching that at the moment. We also watched the Gambit, the Queen's Gambit. Oh, yeah. Really good.
Love that. Love that.
Wonderful.
We're all singing. And also Schitt's Creek, if you haven't watched that.
Oh, we started that and Nick didn't quite like it enough. So we
yeah, did. It took my parents a bit of...
Took us a while. Took us a while.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Grace, is there anything else you want to ask David about feminism?
I forgot. I don't really... life is just too stressful right now. I honestly can't be bothered. Talk about feminism.
Are you, Grace? Are you in another room, or are you at home? Are you?
No, I live very conveniently. I live in the granny flat next door to my parents' house. They don't let me in that much, but fine. I'm half in, half out.
Fine.
Yeah.
So, where are you guys again? Camden, somewhere.
Yeah, near Hampstead Heath.
Oh, you're in that.
I love
NW3.
Three, exactly.
Yeah.
Perfection.
Yeah.
Posh. Well, it's been lovely to talk to you.
Sorry?
I say it's been lovely to talk to you, as ever.
Oh, no, yeah, it's been great.
What should we call this program about? The grumpy old men's already been done. My glass fully empty.
Is my glass fully empty? How shit is it?
You seem more optimistic than my dad.
A boomer, a Gen X, and a millennial. I don't know. Am I more optimistic?
I think. I don't know you. You're not my dad, so I wouldn't know. But when I walk into the living room, my dad's sort of.
I can go pretty dark, actually. But no, I suppose I'm. I'm the ancestor of enslaved people. Of course, I'm bloody optimistic. I'm still here. But I can go pretty dark, and I do worry.
And I also think you're still in politics, which maybe means you have to even have a forced sense of optimism, even if it's not.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. That's the other thing. Going back to that question, so about landing in Westminster age 27. So the other thing in. You still there?
Yeah. We hang on in every word.
I touched the screen. Is that when I came in, it was all about these young, upwardly mobile, sharp-elbowed political researchers who were going to become prime minister. So I had the Miliband brothers, Balls, Yvette Cooper, Purnell, Burnham. The Tories had Cameron and Osborne. And then a bit later, Gove and Boris came. But it so... And then there was me. I was like, people kept saying, well, this is a young... And it's like, hang on a bit. I'm not from the same... I mean, those guys are like, they're political. You know, they've been doing it since they were three. You know, all these sort of, you know, think tank geeks and all the rest of it. I mean, many of them, dear, dear friends. But I was always... And what's been interesting, the thing, the longevity of politics... is obviously you can work it out yourself, but many of those have now left politics. They're not in politics for one reason or another. I guess he's still standing.
And do you think that's because most of those have tried and failed to become the leader?
I'm not making any judgment, but it's that thing is you just don't know when you start out. It's a funny old business, politics. You just haven't got
you were saddled. You were saddled very, very early on with you were going to be the Black Blair and the British That's Obama.
Right. I was never
going to
be.
That's a gig.
Anyone who knows me well knows that was never, ever going to be a case. But I am still here.
Yeah, you are. And we're very grateful for that.
And so, just like your dad, you know, actually, when you've had a few bruises, you've had a few ups and downs, politics, strangely, can be quite generous to experience, quite likes experience, strangely. Might not mean you're going to have the top job, but it's not all about that. But it does like you've seen, you know, you're not going to put up with any nonsense. So anyway, that's
that's where the optimism comes
from. I'm still standing. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, listen, once we're on to singing Elton John songs, I think it's time to go.
That's what your little podcast can be called, you two.
Don't do that.
Little podcast.
So that was very fun. What I love about David is, I mean, I've never met him, but
You've never met David?
No.
Yeah, you have. You met him at people's vote rallies.
No, I've just seen him at people's vote rallies. Right. I was never allowed into the VIP
bit.
Yes,
you were. You bloody just turned up and
came in. I said, Dad. And also, I'm Alice Campbell's daughter. I am Alice Campbell's daughter. And then they'd go and they'd get you and they'd say, Grace is here with seven people. Can she come in? I was
three
like,
of them photographers.
The only thing that I have left is that I can get you front row of a anti-Brexit march. You used to get me concert tickets, but no more.
And the cheese and hamburger prep.
But what I love about David is how much he laughs. He laughs a lot. And he laughs, like, when he's telling stories so much, it's contagious.
No, he's got a rumbling laugh.
Yeah. He's a real laugher, so that's always lovely.
Yeah. But it's interesting how he goes from that and then he'll suddenly go very quiet. Do you notice when I talked about, you know, this bloody government and he goes, they're shocking.
I know. So shocking. But don't you think he did that because because your actual point then was Labour. Why aren't Labour doing more? And I actually think he whispered because he hoped the mic wouldn't pick up on him whispering. Because he was saying it's shocking that Labour hasn't done
No, he
much.
Wasn't. To be fair, he was saying the government is shocking, I think. I thought I actually made an interesting point about Labour that, you know, the scale of the election defeat is the country's message is basically we're not going to listen to you, you'll come back with somebody different. It's a good point, that.
I know, but Keir's doing such a bad job, Dad.
No, he's not. He's not, honestly. People are so down on Keir, it's unfair.
Well, I just think he's very, very neither here nor there.
You did say that.
And that shows he's like, I just don't think his personality is coming through very much. So I think he's struggling. Young people hate him.
Hate?
A lot of people hate him.
Hate?
Sorry, not hate. Well, I think he's doing a really bad job.
What, because he's not angry enough about COVID and Brexit? Or
yeah,
what?
I think because he's neither here nor there. And I think a lot of those people are people who have inherited a lust for Corbyn. So I think a lot of those are the really...
Yeah, and he's not, you know, he's aiming for people who just left Labour in a way because of Corbyn.
But what upset me that David said was that the numbers that Labour are going to have to get they want to win is horrific. Worrying.
Against
me.
This ridiculous, awful, venal, disgusting government.
Yeah, but you know.
They get worse and worse and worse.
Anyway, something upbeat. What was the Burnley-Tottenham score?
No, it's on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
But I thought his views on Mourinho were very strong, weren't they?
Very,
No messing around there.
Do you think Mourinho will listen to this podcast?
Well, I reckon that'll get
Jose,
picked up.
Jose, if you are listening, we...
Obrigado.
Even though David said that about you, I really love you and would love you to come on to the podcast.
And also, Jose, you're still the biggest name on the front cover of Winners.
Yes, exactly.
In terms of the font size.
Mainly
anyway, I'm doing the commentary on Sunday at the game, so I'm looking forward to that. We had an amazing win against Crystal Palace, and then we had this terrible game against West Brom last weekend. It was 0-0, but we were terrible.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, so, things are looking up, aren't they, Alistair?
Yes, Grace, they are.
Things are looking up. Who knows? Maybe in June we'll all be in a packed football stadium. It's hard to imagine.
I can't see that. And listen, can I just warn our listener that the government will balls up this four-step thing.
I don't think people don't think that.
Mm.
We've been through a whole year of this.
Yeah.
Nearly coming up to when the first lockdown happened, I thought I was still going to have a birthday party on April the 30th.
This week's the anniversary of the end of Boris Johnson's two-week holiday not giving a shit about COVID.
Yeah, exactly.
When he was sorting out his little private life.
Oh, live, laugh, love, everyone. Live, laugh, love.
Do I have to say that as well?
Yeah, say it.
Live.
Laugh.
Laugh.
Love.
Love. Live, laugh, love.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.